the HFC Student Activities Office can connect you with campus-wide events and concerts, varsity sports, theater, dance and musical performances, our on-campus art gallery, study abroad programs, and any of nearly 40 student organizations for you to join. The HFC Student Activities Office operates 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday in the fall and winter semesters, and 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday in the summer semester. You can find the HFC Student Activities Office on campus in the M Building or call 313-845-9865. That's 313-845-9865.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Welcome to the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here. Happy hot August days, let's put it that way. We feel like we're still heating up here in Metro Detroit, but I'll tell you what I know is heating up, and that is this campus at Henry Ford College. So much anticipation for our students coming back in just a couple of weeks, and so much going on to prepare for that. It's pretty exciting, one of my favorite times of season, and we're going to dive in pretty deeply and talk about some of the changes that have happened over the summer and previous, and also some of the expectations that we have moving forward for this campus community and, of course, our community at large. Welcome to the WHFR Journal. My first guest today is no stranger to the WHFR airwaves, no stranger to the music scene in the Detroit area, and a good buddy of mine, and his name is Steve Glazer. Steve is the chairperson here at Henry Ford College in the School of Liberal Arts. Steve represents the department we call FPAD, which is Fine and Performing Arts Department.
Correct.
So welcome, Steve. Welcome back to WHFR.
Cool. Good to see you, Susan.
Thank you. Likewise. So, boy, talking about moving and shaking, I want to start with what I'm sure is on the forefront of your mind, or has been for a while, and now we're actually seeing amazing progress, and that is your beloved, our beloved Sisson Art Gallery.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the gallery, and then we'll work
well,
up to
today.
Well,
I can't tell you, I don't know that much mm-hmm. as far as far back history. I mm-hmm. you know the year, you know, since I came to HFC, which was 2004, but the gallery was part of the original building, you know, original blueprint for the building, and has been in existence since the building opened in, I think, 1979, and has looked much the way it was when the building opened mm-hmm. in 1979 until I guess this past February when they started actually doing the work to renovate it.
And when you say doing the work to renovate it, sounds like an easy peasy kind of a thing, but this has been a long, hard fight to get to happen.
Yes.
And why did we need a renovation? What's happening?
It was outdated as far as the way it physically appeared, and the lighting was outdated. So just bringing it into contemporary, you know, times, for the most part, and I mean, also over the years, when it was originally built, there was a skylight over part of it that dripped whenever mm-hmm. it rained hard. So the carpeting was badly stained on the floor. So there is no longer carpeting on the floor. It's, you know, it's all pulled up. The glue, two layers of glue scraped off, which took several days of, you know, manpower in there, and machinery, and then polished concrete. So it's like shiny. You can, you know, see some of the scars in the concrete and stuff. I mean, that's fine. That's what, you know, some of the, you know, New York, Chicago galleries look like that are built in, you know, old buildings, and that have concrete floors. The room, the walls were sort of medium warm brown, light brown color. It's like sort of a grayish brown. Carpeting, I was given the choice of carpeting or drywall, and you can't hold anything of any weight on with drywall. Mm. And so I said, well, we could put a, you know, a beam, or not, instead of beams, a track all the way around it, about 6 foot, that you can hang wires from. I said, yeah, but it's like, what if you're doing you still only have so much weight to hang stuff with and stuff. So we chose the carpeting, but the carpet is a medium gray color. So nothing looks out of place against it or will look out of place against it. The above area, which was painted to match the carpeting on the wall, where it goes all the way up through the second floor, which is half the gallery, does that. Half of it has a sunken ceiling where there's a room above. The part that goes up is black. So, and then there's a ton of new lighting, but the tracks that hold the new lights are black, and the cables that hold them up are black. So you don't even with the lights on, you don't see above the lighting, and where it was very clear before, where there was metal slats above the sunken area that's now hardwood, and then there's hardwood sort of around where the level of the lights in the side of the half of the room that goes higher to tie that all in together. The two beams, one that's freestanding, one that's along the wall, is black. So it's like, it looks like a professional gallery now, which it hasn't looked at or looked like in my years at HSC.
Well, one would think that when it was initially created, it probably was pretty state of the art.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
Right,
yeah,
but now.
It wasn't, I don't know if it was state of the art, but it was pretty good.
You know, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, Steve, for a minute, and I know you sort of live and breathe art, as you should, as head of the Fine and Performing Arts Department, representing both faculty, adjuncts, and your students, most especially. But shouldn't it be about the art? What? So why do we need the fancy walls? What difference does it make what color this and the ceiling and the lighting? Aren't we going in there to see the art?
That's a good question. And the reason for having the walls a gray color, the area above being black and even the wood is so that you don't look at anything, so that when something's on the wall, you see the artwork, not the wall, so that your eyes focus on the artwork. That's why, you know, so many professional galleries these days are white. But then, you know, and I had this conversation with the design team that was brought in that said, you know, your choices are carpet or, you know, drywall painted white. Is that, you know, drywall can't hold the weight, and
right.
We've had stuff in there, you know, pieces that are 50, 75 pounds with like 2-inch screws going into the walls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
but what about the white versus the like a more neutral? Because I know people say white is, I don't think white is neutral. I think white is pretty stark, actually.
It's dark, but when you're in front of a white wall and something is on the white wall, you see whatever it is.
It pops. So going with the carpeting, but something a light tone, earthy tone, is going to work well.
It used to be an earthy tone.
Okay.
And now it's not. Now it's a neutral gray.
Neutral. Okay. That makes sense.
Because that way you're going to see the color, even if it's white on the wall, as opposed to, that earth tone behind everything, which, though that's just a subtle difference, it's a big difference with a lot of colors that it is in front of it. So it's like, how do you direct the viewer's eyes?
Yeah, that makes sense. I shouldn't have called gray an earthy tone. I was thinking of like slate and rock and that kind of thing, but earthy tone, I guess.
Yeah, because now it is sort of a slate gray, where before it was. I'm trying to think of how to. It'd be like a beige earth, type color, like baked clay surface.
Got it. Well, you know, we're talking a lot about the aesthetics, about what it's going to look like, the lighting, and so on. We need to be clear that this is a gallery that is open to the general public for when there are shows, when there are exhibits going on, and primarily designed to educate students, inform students, and showcase students. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what you intend to do once this space and maybe kind of when you think it's going to be wrapped up. Here we are into August at this point, and I know with school right around the corner, they're on a tight deadline. Will they be done? Who knows, but hopefully. But what do you intend to do in terms of showcasing this beautiful space so that we can come in and see all these things you're describing?
I'm waiting for final clearance that's finished. There is a couple of wires that were done after everything else was completed. One is the Wi-Fi, and the other is the phone that were both mounted on the wall. That, you know, right now they're just wires hanging. I hope they put, you know, whatever the cover, the wire covers on them and mount those before school starts, because I do plan on probably revisiting an exhibition that we had that was partly done by HFC students and partly done by the city of Dearborn, called We Are Dearborn, because we have that on campus. We own half of it, and the Dearborn Community Fund owns half of it, but I think they're just happy. They're happy to store it here. So that would be something we can hang, and so that there's something on the walls immediately when students come back or when school starts.
And is that, as I recall, the exhibit with showcasing faces, showcasing people?
Large portraits. Large portraits, and it got a lot of, you know, positive feedback. In fact, the city of Dearborn made a calendar out of it one year, the year after it was up in the gallery. And so that is what I plan to put up initially. We have a couple events going on within the Fine Arts Building the end of the end of September. One is the whole Fine Performing Arts Department is hopping on to something that John Michael did this past year, and I think it was introduced to him elsewhere, and it's sort of a 24-hour rush to start, complete, and present a project. So in theater, playwrights will be given a given amount of time to write 10 to 15-minute plays, and then the next day students will learn them, and at the end of the 24 hours they will perform. And I think this is going to encompass art, music, graphic design, and theater all together this year, you know, with each of us doing different things. So hopefully the outcome of the art and graphic design will be, you know, a display in the gallery that's quickly hung during the last hour before, you know, so that when someone comes to the performance that takes place in the Adre, there will also be art and graphic design in the gallery that, you know, is along the same line. Yeah. It will be student done work in the, you know, in the process beginning to end in 24 hours.
That's very cool. We're all hopping on that bandwagon, very excited to do so, and John Michael will be joining us for the second half of our show today to talk a little more about that. So, but it's nice to see that interactivity, and I know collaboration is
that's something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And never got a lot of support by, you know, other people in the fine performing arts until John Michael came aboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice. And things are changing in that way. And it really is a community, isn't it?
It is.
The arts.
And I think it's more of an even moving forward, I think, yeah, music is more willing to participate. We'll see how that turns out.
Yeah.
And then the following Friday, we have our big Discover Day. And last year, you know, everything that has offices in FPAD or in the McKenzie Fine Arts Building, including your area, had tables in the gallery. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be doing the same this year for for the Discover Day, for when we have 1,000 or so high school kids coming and checking out HFC. And then after that, I guess trying to figure out the gallery season, and part of it is all of our gallery pedestals are stored in the basement. They all haven't been painted for 8 years. So are we gonna, we haven't had an elevator working in the building since October. So
there's a lot to do.
Yeah, so it's like elevator's working, then we can paint the pedestals and get them upstairs. But we can't do that if the elevator isn't working because they're not something that you can just carry up the stairs. They're heavy.
Yeah. Well, you know, what it sounds like to me, Steve, is that it's sort of like obviously like anything is a process, and one piece of that has to be held or isn't
quite functioning. Yes, so I can't make absolute decisions. Yeah. I have a lot of ideas on what could go in the gallery, you know, even this year, and have reached out to one person who is a printmaker who teaches at Muskegon Community College, who, when I juried a student show there, I saw her work. This was the summer after COVID first hit, and so have wanted to bring her work to HFC.
Nice.
And maybe try to figure out if we can afford like a day-long printmaking, even if it's like, a very simple printmaking, but try to get students, involved in something that they haven't done before. Mm-hmm. There's a good chance we do a faculty show just because usually I try to have the gallery season planned out 6-8 months a year in advance, and I haven't been able to do that because the gallery's been out of commission since COVID hit, and then they started doing the work in February, of which we first heard 2 months, and then that grew as supply chain holdups. And so now we're at the finishing stages, but not quite there.
Well, I think others can relate to what you're talking about. It's not unique to art, the art gallery, the Sisson Art Gallery, or this community, in fact, or this college. We know that all of these issues that we're talking about, that you're expressing, they happen. We can't control them.
Yeah, we can't control
it. The good news is it is moving forward.
Yeah, and it's like the same
progress
with the elevator. It's I'm not placing blame on anyone on the campus, other than maybe it should have been done long ago instead of Band-Aids, but now it's like waiting for parts.
Yeah. And I understand that's hopefully almost done too. So, would make my life easier too,
your office is upstairs. two of the three classes I'll be teaching are upstairs, and I usually bring supplies to, and demonstration pieces and stuff. And it's like, so it's up and downstairs, and sometimes two or three, or more trips, getting a class going, and then the same at the end of class.
Well, I think we don't appreciate what we have until we miss it, and this is one of those situations. Others can relate.
Yeah.
And this leads us, I think, very nicely, Steve, into some of the other areas of fine and performing arts that you coordinate and that you chair. So as we talk about Henry Ford College and we talk about the arts at Henry Ford College, it's not just ceramics, it's not just physical art gallery, things on walls and that kind of stuff, but you referenced music, we've got graphic design, we've got photography and other areas. So where, and we've got about 10 minutes here we can talk. So just tell us a little bit, highlight some of the things that if we've got a listener saying, this is exciting, I want to be a part of this.
Yeah.
What do we offer?
The art department or the art area, and I'm going to say art area as opposed to graphic design area and music area and theater area, and if I may dare, reference dance also, areas within the fine performing arts department they're better known as programs, but to me they're, areas, because I like the idea of working together. I always have. So I'll go by each one of them quickly. My main area is art. My background is in ceramics and other art classes, but my concentration in both my undergrad and graduate school education within art was working with clay. But we also, you know, we have a very comprehensive associate in fine arts and studio art program that's designed to transfer holistically into a bachelor of fine arts program, which is double the amount of credit hours than just a standard bachelor's program usually has. It's usually within National Association of Schools of Art and Design standards, that means a minimum of 78 hours, credit hours in art out of your 120 as a minimum, and up to 90 at some schools.
And what does this degree allow someone to do career-wise?
Basically, it's a training to be an artist or to go to graduate school. You know, and if you want to teach at a college level, then going to graduate school for a Master of Fine Arts is, you know, a mandatory stepping stone.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned in conversations with heads of art programs at the university levels throughout the state, in meetings that the Michigan Community College Association put on in Lansing, that four-year schools really wanted to try to find ways for students to transfer into their BFA programs, not their BA programs, because they are proud of the students in their BA programs. That's what they push. So we have a degree that transfers into that, which we have articulation agreements with both Wayne State and Eastern, which are 73 hours at HFC's campus to Eastern, 76 hours to Wayne. So you're transferring to both of those schools as a second semester junior.
Mm-hmm. In terms of specialty and skill set, how does like share some of the things that someone would have their hands into?
They will, art student takes, 2D design, 3D design, drawing one, drawing two, a color theory class, a digital media class that encompasses how to make, use the computer as an art making tool, a life drawing class usually, a painting class, a ceramics class, a photography class, either darkroom or digital. That's student's choice, but we run both. Alternating semesters. And then a couple of, second level or third level classes, and then three art history classes. So it's built to mimic the first 2 years within a university Bachelor of Fine Arts program.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a graphic design program that has both an associate's in arts and graphic design, associate in applied arts and graphic design, and an associate in applied arts transfer to Lawrence Tech graphic design.
And then in graphic design, what define graphic design?
Graphic design is basically working in the industry. It's a Perkins program on our campus, so that means 2 years into a job market. It is not necessarily a transfer program, though it could be. So you have usually a 2D design, then a drawing one, and then the rest of your classes are computer-based digital media, mm-hmm. Visual media classes.
Okay. Well, you also referenced music,
music,
and then theater as
well. We have pretty comprehensive music that has both vocal and band performance type areas, and also recording arts program or recording arts certificate. It's not a full program, though that could be something I think that could be worked on in the future, because some of the four-year schools are building performing arts degrees now. We have a theater program with John Michael Saffel leading that, and I say his name because he's new on campus as of a year ago. Yeah, I guess since I already did graphic design, I should recognize Vicki Shepherd, who's over that area. And John Michael brought in the HFC 24 idea, like doing everything in 24 hours.
Yep, that'll be fun.
Really looking to that happening. And then had some incredible plays last year. In fact, one of them, we had someone from the Kennedy Center watching it and suggest that one of our students gets or was nominated for national recognition. It's actually, I think Katie is a journalism student. She's like a double major of journalism and then general studies, and has taken a bunch of clay classes. Mm-hmm. So it's like I introduced her to John Michael because I know that she likes sewing and stuff like that. So she ended up making these skeleton props and costumes. And the person from the Kennedy Center, I guess, fell in love with her props and costumes.
Yeah, that was from the play The Passage.
Yes,
that we
from the, yeah, I couldn't think of the
Katie
name
Morgan.
Of it. Thank
yeah.
you.
Oh, yeah. She's taken some of our classes as well. And so I think, you know, circling back to the students, everything that I know I do, and I know you well enough, Steve, that you do, and everybody that you're talking about, we're here because we want to not only support our students with what they want to do or they know they want to do, but to give them options and opportunities to try things that they may not know exist, or they may not know if they like it or if they're good at it, etc. So having this wide range at a community college level, I think, is just a beautiful thing. I'm biased, but I think it's a beautiful thing. So how do you address when a student comes in for the first time and says, I think I'm pretty artistic and I want to kind of pursue that, but I'm not sure what to do? What would you recommend as we wrap up today?
I get a lot of students that are like that, you know, that come and ask me questions, and essentially, and sometimes the students say, well, I don't want to take a two-dimensional design or beginning drawing class. It's like, that's the beginning of everything at a college, you know, art program. And I think the same thing goes for, you know, beginning music. It's like, well, I already know how to read music or whatever, but then, okay, now then you have to learn, you know, the music theory and stuff like that. And so we all have introductory classes, and sometimes they're not your favorites. And then there's, you know, sometimes students can step right into a performance or a studio class. There are ones that you can do. It's not always the best thing to do it right away, but if you're really in tune, I mean, I knew out of high school I wanted to do clay, so it's like I found my way into that sooner than I probably should have. Actually, it was my second year, so yeah, it was about right in retrospect, but it's like I would have taken it my first year, except the school I was at my first year didn't have clay, so I wasn't able to. But yeah, and it's like, we're all open to, you know, a student that wants to experiment. And we all, I think each of our areas has just a liberal arts pathway, so that if you don't want to go heavy into just one thing, you can do a little exploration. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as Katie, it's like she's been a general studies major. She, yeah, I think is doing the credits, if not having the credits for a degree in CIS, and then also has taken a bunch of ceramics classes, has taken, you know, is now was editor of the Mirror News last year, and stuff like that. So, yeah, Katie's a unique individual, and generally, you know, when she jumps into something, jumps into it full speed ahead.
And that is not necessarily something that most of our students do, but it's nice to see students develop and grow into becoming that confident of a person in what they want to try or experience. But we recognize that we may have someone right now listening saying, it sounds interesting, but I don't know. So the first place is really just to reach out.
To reach out.
Some information, maybe get a tour once the gallery is available and the tour of all the facilities. We're very proud of what we do and what we have. So, Steve, how can someone reach you if they wanted to learn more about fine and performing arts, the Assistant Gallery, or anything related to the very big hat that you wear here at Henry Ford College?
Email or phone me. Mm-hmm. I can give you email.
Sure.
Is first initial S, last name GLAZER at hfcc.edu. Is campus full?
Sure.
Campus phone number is 313 845-6485, or I'm in F140 of the McKenzie Fine Arts Building, or Building F, though the ones that have been around for a long time still refer to it as the McKenzie Fine Arts Building, as our longtime Building M, where the cafeteria is being renamed the McDonald Building.
Yes.
After John McDonald, longtime professor and then full-time faculty union head for between his faculty and then union involvement here, for, I think, over 40 years.
Yeah.
So it's like the idea of calling a building by its name, not just its emergency letter, to me means a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of the students these days don't realize that it's like the Building F is actually the McKenzie Fine Arts Building if you look at the outside of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the beer building that has the cafeteria and student activities office.
And this radio station.
Yeah.
Where we are right now
will be the John McDonald Building. I don't know how they're going to, the full name of it.
Right.
I think the dedication is the 22nd.
Coming up in a week or so. We have so many things to be excited about. And again, while it seems like maybe we wait for years and years and years for some of the stuff to happen, it is happening and it does happen.
It does happen.
We thank our community. We thank our citizens and our administration and volunteers.
And our board.
And our board, yes, for helping to make this reality.
And if I can put a plug in, it's like, this being a little bit political, it's like we have a major millage coming up this fall that we desperately need to make sure that it passes to keep Henry Ford operating in the way that it is right now and has been since, its founding in, 1939?
Mm-hmm. We've come a long way, and we have a long way still to go.
Yeah.
Steve, thank you for your time today. Continued success with both the Sisson Gallery. We look forward to having our listeners come in. Whoops, sorry about that. Come in for a show, and we wish you well as you start to greet students here in the next couple of weeks. So all the best.
Looking forward to all that, and thank you very much, Susan.
Thank you. My pleasure. We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here. Coming up next, John Michael Seffel. We spoke of him only moments ago, talking about theater here at HFC. Stay with us. Such a pleasure to talk with Steve Glazer, and can you pick up the passion in that man's voice? I tell you, he is very excited about what he's doing here at Henry Ford College, as he should be. Lots going on. Speaking of so much going on, I'll tell you, it never ends for this next gentleman. John Michael Seffel is joining us on the second half of our WHFR Journal today. Happy August and happy almost back to school to you. If you're interested, by the way, in learning more about Henry Ford College, it's many programs, it's many areas of study, or maybe you just want to take a class. That's okay, too. Please let us know. Just reach out anytime. You can simply go to hfcc.edu or call the main school number, which is 313-845-9600. 313-845-9600. My shameless plug. Now, on to theater at Henry Ford College. We talked a little bit about this already, and thank you for listening today on this Friday. But John Michael Seffel is the director of theater here at Henry Ford College, professor of theater, PhD, a renowned author, a director, and really, I could fill in about 50 more things, but we're going to let him do that. But for me, my perspective, just a wonderful colleague and teammate and a really cool guy. So, John Michael, welcome back to WHFR. Happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so, so happy to be here. Thank you for having me again.
Sure. It's a pleasure. It has been a very exciting and whirlwind year for you. I know this because sitting on the sidelines or standing on the sidelines or running alongside of you, I've got to experience it. But just a debrief on this first leg of your experience here at Henry Ford College, please.
Sure, yes. So the theater program had largely because of COVID, and so obviously we weren't all gathering in places, and that's my profession is gathering in places. Mm-hmm. So between that and some restaffing and things, the theater program had really come almost to a standstill. And so we tried to burst right out of the gate right away in the fall. We ended up doing a total of 5 shows last year. We started with The Passage, which was our sort of postmodern take on Moby Dick. Had followed that up with 5 A.M. Pancakes, a lovely short little piece about COVID, and Tenderly, which was the beginning of our attempting to bring in more plays specifically written by people that that identify as Arab American. We then had our HFC 23, which was sort of a madcap 24-hour experience in which we started from nothing and wrote and built and staged plays all within a 24-hour span, and finished it off with the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged, which is just a fun and silly and wonderful experience. So it's been great, and we're revving up to do it again.
I'm laughing because you just summarized what was a full year of blood, sweat, tears, etc., in about a 1.5, you know, a 1 minute little spark there. And I only imagine, because I don't know exactly how much energy and effort and time goes into each of those things individually. So thank you for the summary.
Absolutely.
And I love how it's like, we did that, that's in the past, and here we go. And now we're moving forward. And that is exactly what you're doing. So we're very grateful for that. How are you resting, relaxing, getting some downtime during this, what we sort of call the off season, which I know for many of us is not, but you've been busy over these summer months. Let's talk a little bit about that,
sure,
too, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I had the good opportunity to head back to New York. I've done some things in the city before, but it's been a few years while I was off getting my PhD and what have you. And I had an old playwright friend of mine contact me and said that his show was getting its premiere in New York City, a new play called The World Was Yours by William Ivers. And he said, I need you to come direct it. So he found the funds and everything, so I was able to head to the city and a little old stomping ground there and direct that play, and that was a joy. So that was at the Tank, which is a nice little sort of off-the-way thing just south of Times Square. And that went wonderfully. And then at the same time, I've been working for the past year and a half on a piece for Routledge, which is a publishing company out of England. And in terms of sort of the scholarly end of what I do, Routledge has always been sort of my dream publisher of I'll have made it when I see my name in the Rolling Stone or in Routledge was sort of my approach. And finally, I do have this chapter following up on the book that I put out a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. A chapter in this new volume, Out of Time, Temporality and Disability Performance, out by Routledge, which I'm proud to say it's part of their equity, diversity, and inclusion in theater line. So something I care a lot about. So much of my work is in specifically disability theater, both in terms of performance by disabled individuals and how disability is portrayed in the theater. So a chapter in that, and then not only was I having that opportunity to see my work published by this company that I respect so much, but when I got the book and looked through it, alongside some of my idols in the profession, people that I've been quoting and reading and admiring for the past 15, 20 years, and to see my name alongside them was just a really, really huge hoot. And then I tried to get my kids to understand why all of that mattered, and they rolled their eyes and asked me to make them lunch. So such is the life.
Now you can relate to all the other celebrities that their
exactly.
kids are like, yeah, you're in another movie. Yeah, you just put out an album, yeah. You know, gold medal. You're just dad. That's okay. But we appreciate you.
Well, thank
we
you.
Very much, very much so. The theme of disability, and you sort of alluded to two very different sides of this coin, if you will, both equally important from an outsider, again, looking at your analysis and interpretation of this, how disabled people are represented in theater. I look at that as in media in
sure.
general from my perspective, and we analyze that all the time in classes. I shouldn't say all the time, not as much as we should. We need to continue to shine that light. But in terms of providing accessibility to disabled people that want to participate in theater and want to have their creative juices, you know, utilized and scratch that itch and so on, how much of that do you think about as you're planning your season of shows, and, and how does that process work for you?
Sure. So there's a couple approaches here, right? Part of this idea of it being separate, how people who identify as disabled are portrayed, and part of people who are disabled having an opportunity to portray themselves are really part of the same conversation, right? And so, for example, in the first play that I did once I came here, we had a lead character who the character is disabled, and the gentleman who was cast in the role had a, we'll call it an adjacent disability. So not the same experience, certainly, but in many ways very overlapping. And it was very important to me that we seek out an opportunity to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. And that personal experience ended up becoming so much of his work on the show and so much of how we sort of approach things. Certainly any time I'm dealing with any show, whether we're talking about disability or anything else, where identity is a major part of the character, if I'm able to involve either as the actor or as a dramaturg or somebody in this conversation, so we're not taking guesses at what somebody else's experience is like, if we have that opportunity to be true and honest about an experience, about an identity, that's always what I want to do. In terms of choosing shows, it affects me, one, in that I can say, well, what identities are in front of me? How can we best represent them? But also that I go, okay, that's a fascinating play. I don't think we are the people to do it. So I may love the play, but I'm going to pass it on and move to something else. And I think that's just an important standard way, sort of anyone with the responsibility of being an artistic director in this sense and choosing a season, hopefully should be approaching it.
Hopefully.
Not
always. Your experience in, you know, from yesterday and then looking backwards, did things that you went through, positive and negative, impact who you are today in making those decisions, or at least having that thoughtful analysis of making decisions?
Of course. If we're speaking about me personally, I will say I'm really fortunate in that I live in a boundary space, on a border space in a lot of things, as a person who was born with multiple disabilities, and sometimes I'm a cane user and sometimes all this, and spent many times in hospitals and things, but also as somebody who on some days, today for example, I walk around, there's nothing visibly disabled about me. It really gives a wonderful opportunity to say, look at how the world treats me differently on Monday versus Tuesday, and gives a real sense of that and what assumptions I make when I'm feeling at my best and things like that. I'm also a Jewish American, and that's a fascinating sort of hybrid of identities and things that are and are not sort of in the majority and all those sorts of things. And those fascinating, those sorts of identities have that fascinating ability to both blend with majority and at times really stick out as not part of majority, and to experience both the pluses and the minuses of those sorts of things. And I think it's that borderline aspect that has made me so interested in how identity works and how identity is portrayed.
Mm-hmm. You bring these experiences that others can learn from, certainly, but also experiences that will allow you to push other people beyond the boundaries that they, if this, you know, living with a disability, might not think that they can. So you're sort of a living experience for them to connect with, and I think that's why your students love you, frankly, because I know they do. But how does that transcend into the student instructor or director actor relationship here at Henry Ford?
Sure, I appreciate that. I will say, I think if we take disability in sort of an expanded view, right, I think we are quick to think, well, signs show a person in a wheelchair. That's what disability means. Whereas with invisible disabilities and mental illness and all sorts of things and cognitive differences, et cetera, so many of our students, even if they never thought of themselves as I am a disabled individual, they certainly can relate to that. And every single human has, here are my challenges, here's what I'm trying to overcome, here's why sometimes those things are good and they make me me. And so certainly throughout the rehearsal process, tapping into those ideas, tapping into that individuality is great. But also looking at rehearsal schedules and saying, how can we adjust just like universal learning in classrooms or anything else, anything that we can do to make this accessible to as many people as possible, that's certainly the goal. The only other thing I would add to that is you were just very kind and generous in trying to suggest that I'm providing things, but I'm learning constantly through this process as well. The other thing I did this summer was took an online Arabic class here at HFC, so I'm both a teacher and a student here. And I say this with love. That class is kicking my butt, if you'll forgive my language here. And it's wonderful, and I'm learning so much. And that sense of walking into a situation where I have no grounding here. I'm learning Arabic for the first time and surrounded by people who have a much clearer sense mm-hmm. going into it. And it's wonderfully freeing to know nothing sometimes. And it's wonderfully freeing to go into it and go, okay, I'm here to soak up and learn and try new things. And that's really what I hope our theater program does for everyone that walks in.
That's a great perspective. John Michael Savelle is joining us on this segment of the WHFR Journal. We are talking about theater at HFC. We are talking about the experience and expertise that he brings to his role as director of theater, professor of theater, etc., and also that just powerful and important connection to reaching students where they are, but trying to bring them to where they may or may not realize they want to be, or at least where they can be, and providing that growth potential. So we know that this new semester is going to be filled with its challenges, but filled with its exciting celebrations as well. What are we looking ahead to for the new season?
Well, last year we did 5 productions in all, which was way too much. So this year we're doing 6. But they are different. There are 2 sort of large productions and then a few much smaller pieces. We're actually beginning right away on September 15th. We're going to be involved with a consortium on AI here on campus. And so we will be presenting a short play that was written by AI, though performed by live actors, just so we can sort of explore where is AI right now and we can get those conversations going about how it can help in the classroom and the ways that it certainly provides us with some challenges. We're going to be following that almost immediately with auditions for 2 things. First is our 24-hour event last year. It was so chaotic that we decided to do it twice, and we're expanding it this year. This year it is going to include all of the Fine and Performing Arts department, so all of FPAD. So we will have music created in 24 hours. There's going to be art and graphic design and theater, and all these things are going to be going on, the details of which are still coming together now, mm-hmm. so I have to leave it somewhat vague. Other than to say that will be the weekend of September 29th, and we're going to be holding auditions for the theater portion of that at the same time, August 25th and 26th, as we hold auditions for Leo's Big Day Out, which is our fall children's musical. I'm so excited about this. This is a premiere of this version of the show anywhere, and the premiere outside of New York City of the show at all. Written by Aaron Coleman, it's a brilliant piece about an immigrant family. And when I worked with Aaron, I said, hey, we're in Dearborn, what can we do here? And so he's working very closely with us, and we have restaged that to be around an Arab family. So it's a young boy, Leo, being raised by his aunt, and she is very hesitant to go out and very hesitant of the scary outside world. Mm-hmm. And both in terms of post-COVID and in terms of immigration and all these sorts of things, I think that is a story that many people can connect to. I myself, among all my other sort of identities I was talking about, I'm a first-generation American. My father came to this country as a refugee, and that same sort of sense of like being both part of here and a step apart and all those things, that's Leo, our main character, who was born here and wants to get out and wants to explore things, but is trying to convince his aunt that he can do that and still stay connected mm-hmm. to their culture, to their family, to their language, all these things. So a wonderful, fun, short children's musical that we'll be staging in November, inviting local school districts in, partnering with the Arab American Museum here in town to really make it the best it can possibly be. And it features a cat puppet, so it has everything anyone could ever want, really.
Well, there it is.
Yeah, so that's the fall right there. Really shortly looking forward in the winter semester, we're going to be having some of our students who were nominated last year heading off to the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival and celebrating their really hard and wonderful work. We will be staging an evening of one acts as directed by our students. And what I'm really, really excited about, we'll be creating a new ensemble devised, meaning we sort of write it as we build it, play looking at Detroit history and specifically the Detroit Wall, sometimes called the Burwood Wall, but the wall there that was part of the redlining. And that's going to be a really collaborative effort that will be going up in April that I'm so very, very excited about. So if you add all those things together, six shows.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we know if anybody can pull it off, it's you, because you do really bring out the best in those that you collaborate with, and that's much appreciated. When we incorporate the variable of a student population that's going to support all of these projects that we haven't met yet, potentially, maybe they haven't decided yet that they want to be a part of this, that's always that unknown factor. But how would you introduce this? How would you encourage someone listening? Maybe we have a student listening, a parent of a student, a grandparent saying, I know just the person, could I do this? I don't know, maybe I can do this. How do you reach out to say, come on, join us,
sure,
give it a try?
Wonderful. Actually, a two-part answer, if I could.
Mm-hmm,
sorry.
Please.
First, I want to say that I'm so excited that I think that's going to happen better than ever before. One of the things that we were able to accomplish this year was we established for the first time, I believe, in the college's history, or at least for the past 40 years, a theater club in addition to the theater program. And what that has meant is that we have a whole series of new students who have signed up, who are coming in, incoming freshmen, who see on that list, that's a club I would like information of, and they've all been emailing me. And so, unlike last year coming in and hoping that people show up and that they see our flyers, I now have all these people. If you were one of them, I will be reaching out to you this week. Mm-hmm. We are connecting with all those people who said, theater club, that sounds like fun. And we'll be bringing so many people in. I'm so excited that we have seen so many people click that button and say, yes, that sounds interesting. That said, it's not limited to those people. If you are out there listening, theater is designed to be a voice for our community. If you're part of our community, then you belong here. You deserve to have your voice heard in that. And that is whatever your background is. It could be that you love performing and you've only done it in the shower in front of friends. Great, let's do it on a stage. Could be that you are terrified of performing or have no interest in that. That's fine. From painters to costumers to dramaturgs, you know, the big old English nerd in me loves dramaturgy, which is that art of taking apart the script. We have lighting, we have carpentry, we have all of these wonderful opportunities. Business majors out there, I beg of you to understand how much we need you in terms of publicity, in terms of box office ideas, all of these things. Theater is both an art and an industry. And sincerely, whatever your major is and whatever your interests are, I promise you, in the Venn diagram of life, theater does overlap with what you care about. And you will find a home for yourself and, importantly, friends for yourself over in the theater program. So I would love to hear from you.
That does seem to be one of the threads that I've noticed over the past year when I see students collaborating in a corner in the Fine Arts Building, or I see them practicing on stage or wherever it is. They're just having fun. They're just enjoying themselves, and they'll be working on something that looks very serious as I'm walking by, and then maybe one of them goofs up and then they crack up, and it's just wonderful. It's just the best experience. That's what I love most about that building. Like the movie Fame, you know, it's, you get to hear it and see it and experience it. But in theater, it does seem like people are very trusting. You have to kind of be trusting of your teammates, of your fellow thespians, and really sort of put yourself out there. But with that fear, as you indicated, really does come that connectivity and that bond, dare I go that far.
And I'm so proud. One of the things I'm proudest of in my first year here, and certainly intend to continue this on, is The push against any sort of clique, any sort of, are you a theater kid, are you a theater major, anything like that, none of that exists, and we fight every day to make sure it never exists. Every person who walks in the door to audition or is interested is welcome. And so when you come to see one of our shows, you may be watching a theater major standing right beside a business major, standing right beside every major we offer here. We have students who, and this is important to note, students who are dual credit. So we have high schoolers in our play. We have online only, except that they come to the campus for theater. We had several of those this year who would never would have stepped foot on campus except they heard we had the theater program and so came out and were involved. That work study opportunities, we have so many opportunities to get involved whether you decide to take a theater class or not.
Adults as well. This is
absolutely
not just, like you mentioned, the dual enrollment and the college age, whatever that is these days. We know for Henry Ford College that's a wide range of ages. And in terms of some of the selections that you make for roles, et cetera,
yeah, I believe this past year our range was, I believe our youngest was 17 and our oldest member was in their 60s and everywhere in between. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the way it should be. I really, again, want to repeat, this should be the artistic voice of the community, and our community is vast and diverse and wonderful.
Yeah. John Michael, what do you need to continue to make this success happen? How can we help?
The greatest thing that anyone that cares about theater can do is attend the theater. Audience is the most important part of the process. So please, whether it's us or Dearborn Youth or all the amazing arts programs, but always come back to us. We showing up, and today it's so easy not to show up. It's so easy. Take that extra step. It is always worth it. It always creates a memory far more than your couch can give you.
You shared so many wonderful nuggets of what we, many of us, have been able to experience along with you in your first year and supporting our students, our community, and so many wonderful things on the horizon. How do we keep track of this? How do we find out dates and ticket opportunities and schedules and so on? Where should you send us?
Outstanding. Thank you. We are reworking the website right now. It is outdated. We are in the process of getting that fixed. So certainly through the website, going to the hfcc.edu and just typing in theater into the search will bring you right to our page. That is up with the, that will always be up once there's a show coming up with tickets to purchase. We do have a club-sponsored Facebook group, just Henry Ford Theater, you'll find it right there. And we are actually bringing on some work study students this semester so we can start working on improving our publicity. First year was building the program, second year promoting the program, so we're working on that. And thank you for your patience in the meantime. Mm-hmm. And of course, anyone can always reach out. I'm at jsefel, J-S-E-F-E-L, at hfcc.edu.
That was going to be my next question, so I appreciate you jumping in there with it. We have so much to look forward to. We're just so very excited that this relationship is building and that you are continuing to find creative ways to bring out the best in our community and our students here at Henry Ford College and provide just a wonderful opportunity for entertainment for the rest of us folks that are able to participate in that regard. So we thank you for that. Great success with your writing and your directing, and congratulations on being able to brag to your kids, even though they didn't necessarily appreciate it, about your publishing and so on. So continued success with all of that, and we know there's more to come. Of course, here at WHFR, as we hear about the next show or the next opportunity, keep listening here at 89.3, as we will certainly share opportunities to get involved ongoing. But again, hfcc.edu. And just search theater and you'll find what you need. We thank you for your time. Have a wonderful upcoming semester and continued success.
Thank you so much, and thanks to all the listeners. Much appreciated.
Certainly. This is the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here. We are mid-August, and again, things are hot and getting hotter, figuratively and literally, but it's all good, and we are here to celebrate all the wonderful things that this college and this community provides, theater certainly being at the top of that list. More on the way. Please stay with us as we celebrate all things radio here at WHFR. You never know who you might meet on the radio one day, so we hope you'll continue to listen. We've got more on the way. Kitty Love with the Highway 61 show and so much more. We appreciate you being here as a loyal listener of WHFR, whether it's on the web at WHFR.FM or here on the FM dial in our Dearborn, Detroit area at 89.3. Susan McGraw signing off. Have a wonderful weekend and stay tuned.
Severe flooding from recent hurricanes and other storms has left hundreds of thousands of cars, trucks, and other vehicles unsafe to drive. Flooded vehicles are supposed to be dismantled for usable parts or crushed for scrap, and a flood title should be issued to that car. But some shady dealers will buy a flooded vehicle, clean it up, and get it retitled with no indication it was flooded. Or uninsured cars will be cleaned up by the owner and sold online, also with no warning to the buyer. If the price is too good to be true, it probably is. Make sure to check for flood damage and have a qualified mechanic inspect the vehicle before you write a check. The free VIN check service from the National Insurance Crime Bureau is a good place to start. Head over to NICB.org to check it out.
To report fraud, call us at 1-800-TELL-NICB. This is a public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
South of Memphis, Tennessee.